Hey Podnuts, Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 479, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I am your host, Jeff Halish. I'm joined today by Alan Reeves from Mouse Calls Technology Solutions and Sun River IT. Welcome to the show, Alan.
Thank you, Jeff. I very much appreciate you having me on.
It's great to have you on. So if you want to go ahead and get started and maybe give a little bit of your background of how you got started in this technology field of computer repair.
How did I get started? Well, to go back before any of it, I had the best job in the world in the mid-90s. And that was, I was a bartender in a wonderful restaurant that was in Ponte Vedra, Florida, right across the street from the PGA Tour National Headquarters. Met tons of people, lived a great beach lifestyle. And then I moved to Nashville and realized very, very, very quickly that I wasn't going to find anything like what I had had. And also, you know, I was in my mid-20s, and I knew even at that time that, you know, lifestyle was great and I had a lot of fun. But if I woke up at 40 years old and was doing the same thing, that wasn't good. Something was awry. And it was time to pursue something different. And I didn't really know exactly what that was or what that was going to be. To be very honest, I was flailing a bit. And right around that time, my wife, who was on, she worked actually for Vanderbilt University's News and Public Affairs Division. And she needed to get a computer for home use. That everybody was doing that. It was not required, but very much recommended. Okay. And we found a Mac Performa 6300, which I wish I still had, brand new in the box, for half the price that it should have been. Went and got it, set it up. And over really the next 6 months, I realized that I kind of had a knack for this. I was working a job in the afternoons and evenings, tending bar still at a really nice upscale restaurant downtown, but obviously, you know, didn't care for it, didn't want that to be my obvious long-term life goal.
Right.
And just, again, you know, it was a matter of using it and this natural fascination I had with how it worked. You know, when I was 5 years old, I would pull the bottom out of the rotary dial phone to see what was in there. I would do tape recordings pretty much exactly like what you're doing, but with a portable cassette recorder and a little rinky-dink microphone. And electronics had always fascinated me. So, you know, I was just kind of looking at this and deep diving in. And before I knew it, I was developing a really bad habit of tinkering around from the time I got home about 1 a.m. till 3 or 4 in the morning. And that was making me sleep later. And that was not a good thing. In any case, I thought it was something that I should investigate a bit further. I bought a 166 megahertz Windows 95 machine, which was completely foreign to me. I've looked back on that now, and I think that it really helped me conceptualize how these things worked going from the Mac world to the PC world. Because, you know, when you back in that era, 1996, 97, when you see a hard drive icon on the top right of your screen, you know that's where your stuff is.
Right.
And all of a sudden, under Windows 95, you know, okay, there's C drive. Why is it C? Well, you know, who came up with that? how in the world does this logically make sense? And, you know, people coming from PC to Mac, kind of the same thing. But I had both of them set up on a desk, and I was, you know, learning a lot just by doing it. Didn't have any formal education or anything like that. Decided to go back to school. There's a community college here in Nashville that's really quite good, much better now than they were back then. But thought, you know, what can it hurt? I'll dive back in, see, you know, totally something totally different, totally new and fresh. And about that time, my wife found, she came across an ad in the Tennessean newspaper by Packard Bell NEC, the old Packard Bell Computer Corporation. And they were hiring something called a tech rep on a part-time basis. I applied, not knowing much more than what was in the ad, basically saying you're going to rep the company, talk about new technologies, et cetera, et cetera. And I met a woman who flew in to conduct some interviews, and I was one of three guys here in the Middle Tennessee area who was hired. It was after I was hired that I really kind of found out what the job was. And it wasn't a bad job. It was part-time. We were very, very limited. And I realized later that it was to help ramp up Packard Bell and NEC computer sales in retail stores. The companies were floundering with a very, very poor reputation for quality. I don't know if you remember the old Packard Bell pizza boxes. They were very, very hard to disassemble. There was absolutely nothing standard about them at all. They had a bloatware is putting it nicely. Some of the Packard Bells even shipped with a proprietary GUI that they laid on top of Windows 95, which completely confused people. But long story short, the role that I had was to go into stores like Circuit City and Best Buy and CompUSA. I believe it, Computer City was another one. All the old late 90s retail presences that sold computers. And I would spend time educating their staff on the software, how things worked. I would work with potential buyers just to sort of do a demo for them if they had any questions here and there. And we were limited to, we could work as much as we wanted or as little as we wanted, up to 16 hours a week. So I could fill nights and weekends with this and then just turn in a timesheet and was off to the races. And around Christmas time or so of 1997, I became very, very acutely aware of something, and that is that people would bring in their computers, they would break down these massive desktops and walk them into a Circuit City looking for anybody that could provide tech support to them. And I thought of this, and I'm kind of looking around, and again, you know, we're talking 20 years ago, so it was a bit of a different world. And none of these stores had any kind of real support or repair presence at all. It didn't exist.
Right.
You had some guys in the sales department who were selling on commission, who were tech enthusiasts, maybe, but they were more enthusiastic about their paychecks. And there's nothing wrong with that, but they just weren't really in a position to provide tier two or anything above that level support to anybody. And as I watched this over some weeks, it occurred to me that nobody goes out and buys a car and then brings it back to their salesperson when something goes wrong. It just didn't make any sense. And I'm looking around, and of course, keep in mind that I was, you know, doing this in Middle Tennessee, and being in flyover country, if you will, a lot of advances or business models get here a little bit slower than they do on the coasts. I was not aware of any sort of service that could help these people anywhere. And I talked to my wife about it, And, you know, just said there might be a niche for me to make a little bit of extra money. I have no idea what that looks like, but nevertheless, it might be there. And then I decided maybe I should hang out a shingle. I had no idea what I should charge. I had really no idea of what my true capabilities were as compared to anybody else's. I had never worked in corporate IT. I had never had an IT job other than the Packard Bell NEC one. And I was just more or less playing with this idea in my head. And one of the first things that you do when you're thinking of starting a business, and it's one of the, honestly, it's kind of one of the silliest things to do, is think about what the name should be. And I should have been focusing more on the business model and who I should market to. And, you know, all these things were completely foreign to me. I was thinking, what am I going to call it? And there was the basic stuff like computer doctor, and I just didn't like that. I couldn't find anything I cared for, and my time was very full anyway, so I wasn't giving it a whole lot of thought. And then one night, about 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm sound asleep. My wife wakes me up just out of the blue, and she says, "I know what your business name is." And I said something along the lines of, "Well, it better be good, because I was really sleeping quite well." And she said, "It's Mouse Calls. You make house calls, but for computer mice."
Nice. Very good. Wow.
And I just kind of, the old story, you sit straight up like this lightning bolt hits. And that's when I did start thinking a little bit, right? I got up and got online and checked the U.S. Patent and Trademark Database. And there was nothing, absolutely nothing. So I filed for it and did it wrong. but the fact that I had filed, showing that I was using the name and or any kind of intellectual property at that time, I found out later served me well, because I could show that I was at least doing something at that time if anybody had claimed prior usage. It took till late 2001. But I did get the trademark. I started doing business under the name Mouse Calls on February 16th of 1998, and it is still going. That's how we started.
Wow. That is a great and wonderful story. I'll tell you, very similar background, so I can see I was similar as far as I would take things apart when I was young, and so I just kind of fell into the knack of liking technology, liking taking things apart and repairing them. But man, for a person that doesn't know what they want to do, and then all of a sudden go, "I'm going to get into IT. That sounds like a good idea." But I think a lot of us come that way. And it's something we like to do, something we have a passion for, and we kind of just go with it. And that's wow. So now, you started Mouse Calls and started running your business. When you first started off, what types of things were you doing in the beginning?
Oh, wow. Well, I put up three flyers at local grocery stores here in the Bellevue area of Nashville, where my home still is. I got a call within 2 days, and my first client was a gentleman named Chuck Bader. I still remember that very vividly. Chuck had me come out. He was an interesting guy. He bought and sold Art Deco furniture. He was a dealer, and he had some issues with, you're going to like this, he had some issues with Netscape Mail acting up.
Oh, wow.
Just various and sundry things. And I remember being very uptight. he was presenting me with things that I wasn't necessarily familiar with. I did leave the appointment that evening, though, having solved every single thing that he had asked for. I remember something had to do with a Netscape bookmarks file, and I don't really remember exactly how I fixed it, but I did. And so I walked away thinking, I can do this. Yeah, awesome. I can do this. And keep in mind, and this is something that my kids laugh at, mouse calls predates Google. So there was no really great search engine by which you could find help if you needed it. If you had to just look up a scenario, you were going to AltaVista or Hotbot or Lycos or something like that. And the quality for those who are quite a bit younger than I am, the quality of the results, there was no quality to the results. It would just gather word matches, and maybe it was relevant, maybe it was not.
Right.
So it was a bit more challenging, and I had nobody to escalate to. I was putting myself out there, and you know, it was Wild West. You were on your own. I remember the second job that I had to install a CD drive in a Windows 3.1 machine, figuring out the jumpers, figuring out the BIOS, and by golly, I got that done too.
Nice.
And of course, then I was taking very entry level classes at the community college, and you know, there was nothing hands on at all. So the word of mouth and the marketing and the awareness, no, there was no marketing. It was three flyers. That started to just kick in a little bit. I had a couple of friends refer me here and there. I was doing a lot of work for really home business users, to independent realtors and the like. You asked what I was doing. I was doing pretty much anything related to any sort of software troubleshooting, whether it be PC or Mac. And usually, almost always, I might not be able to figure it out the first time, but you know, 1 out of 10 appointments, maybe I'd have to make a return visit or some such. And you know, I was, again, off to the races. By the end of 1998, I had worked with roughly 75 people and small businesses around the Nashville area. So once the word of mouth hit, it started to really pick up. And I did become aware that on the periphery that there were at least a couple of people that were doing what I was doing, but at the same time, I never encountered them. I never felt like I had real competition, so to speak. And I know, I mean, you know, as years have gone by, I realized that, you know, a lot of IT business owners look at the market I was serving as throwaway work or, you know, garbage, not very profitable, et cetera. But back then, you know, when I was doing this, in addition to going to school, in addition to my other job, it was more than enough to make a little bit of extra bank.
Right.
And that's pretty much the way that it went through 1999. You know, same thing. I'm still a student. I hesitate to call it a side business. But in 1999, the Packard Bell NEC thing went away. They just discontinued the program. So I could do more mouse calls. And that led to more. And then that led to more. Keep in mind that because of the nature of the client base that I had, I didn't have to do much marketing. I was landing in a lot of high income clients, and they like to talk amongst each other. Who do you use for this? Who do you use for that?
Right.
And so I was getting a lot of referrals along that line. And then, came, I guess, what you would call my first game changer in 2000. I was featured as an entrepreneur in a small newspaper that served West Nashville called the West Side News. They did a little write-up. I had just a headshot taken as part of it, and that all of a sudden generated a lot of calls. In mid-2000, I gained a lot more clients by that time. Graduated from the community college and then started more or less doing mouse calls full-time going into, you know, the early part of the millennium.
Now, what were you going to school for?
Computer technology.
Okay.
Exactly what I was doing, but obviously I was getting exposed to networking, which okay. with the market I was serving, I didn't really encounter much. And that was obviously very, very beneficial. I look back on it and I remember, the microprocessor classes and the DOS classes. I tell people that I use about 3% of my education now, but that's our industry. That's it. I mean, you can get your degree and better be prepared to get another one or a certification real quick, because it changes. And that's part of what I love about what we do.
Right. Oh yeah, absolutely. I remember, being a teenager and working with my uncle way back in the day, and this was back in the '80s. And, we were actually running cable for a network inside of, office buildings. And I mean, just the stuff that they were doing back then, it was simple work on my end, but it was just fascinating that it's like a network. What is that? You know?
And, right. Right. And it was really probably about 2001 when I started encountering things that were, I guess it was the first red flags for me that I needed to be much more of a business owner than a technician. I needed to figure out a little bit of a path adjustment. I serviced back in 2000, 2001, I serviced a startup company that made custom golf clubs for kids. It was a great concept. A gentleman here in town had bought a company out of Washington State and moved it here. They were a small operation, but obviously quite upscale. They charged plenty of money for these custom fit clubs for juniors, and they were doing their manufacturing and everything here. They bought it's a workstation that act as the server.
Okay.
And the person who was running the operation came from a banking background, and rather than QuickBooks or something like that, he bought a $15,000 accounting package to run on it. And he was very, very reticent to let me touch or troubleshoot his machine. He just had some real paranoia and security concerns because of his background, and he was the only one doing any sort of backup. And I just didn't like that because I wasn't sure that he knew what he was doing.
Right.
And it gave me a lot of trepidation. I'm not saying I lost sleep over it, but I just thought, this just may not be good. And one day in the fall of 2001, he calls me up and he says, "What is this noise?" And I couldn't make it out. He was holding the phone up to the computer, and I went out there, and essentially the platters within the hard drive had just shattered, and the motor was grinding it to pieces whenever he would turn it on. It was, like you throw a load of silverware into your washing machine, essentially, is what it sounded like. And the company folded because of this data loss. The owner took me aside privately during this time and basically wanted to know exactly how this could have happened. What were the circumstances here? And I laid it out without being disparaging as best I could and said, there wasn't what needed to be there. It needed some sort of automated backup. And I was just not permitted to do what I felt should be done.
Mm.
And that was the end of it. That was the end of it. But it did cross my mind, wait a minute. If I'm growing this business, if I'm going to be in charge of IT for companies even this size, I'm going to have to make some adjustments. I'm going to have to make sure that maybe things are done a little bit better. But it's sort of, I don't want to say it went in one side of my head and out the other, but it wasn't a major part of what I was doing on a day-to-day basis. And I, over the next couple of years, my daughter was born in 2002, and I started feeling overwhelmed. I was allowing the business to run me, much more so than me being able to run it or plan or do certain things that I see online. I see great, great up-and-comers now, computer business owners in peer groups on Facebook, like Acrobo and IT Bog and the marketing group. And, you know, these guys are in their 20s or 30s and they're getting it done right out of the gate. And I didn't have anything to really go on. I didn't have any peers. I didn't really know where to go to get them because nobody was servicing the market that I did. And I was taking on more and more and more business. And then in 2003, in August of 2003, the blaster virus hit. And that day, I talk about it like it was 9/11. That was a beautiful day here in Middle Tennessee. And about 10 o'clock in the morning, I started getting phone calls. And at 10 o'clock that night, I stopped for the day and walked into a local bar called McGillicuddy's to eat lunch. hadn't been able to do anything all day, barely was able to find a bathroom. And sat down and ordered a beer and a burger and started checking my voicemails, and I had 70. And I spent the next 3 weeks going place to place fixing the blaster infection on multiple machines. I would wake up on Monday mornings and I was booked out through Friday night, and obviously working on Saturday. I couldn't keep up with invoicing. And I thought, well, I've got to either halt growth or I've got to hire somebody. And well, you know, you never really want to stop what you're doing if you're growing something. And I made the decision to hire someone, and that led to some interesting stuff over the next year and a half, for sure.
Now, Alan, when that virus hit, you mean you didn't just remote into the machines and just fix them?
Did not have the capability, Jeff. I think at that time I do client satisfaction surveys every year. We're just wrapping up our latest one, frankly. But back then, one of the questions was, do you have broadband or dial-up? And 3/4 of the clients that I was working with had dial-up. And if you recall, once you booted your machine and that virus kicked in, you had 60 seconds. even on a modern-day broadband connection, you would have had to have been extraordinarily good at what you were doing to halt that shutdown sequence and kill the infection. But to answer your question, I was going place to place. And that was also the first time that a lot of people were asking me, don't you have anywhere I can just drop this off so you can do it after hours or at a time that's convenient for you? Why do I have to wait 5 days? And that got me thinking as well. One thing that I can say for certain here is I have made a lot of mistakes. As I know a lot of business owners have. And one thing that I, you know, immediately decided to do was to provide a retail storefront. It was one of those things. I didn't know exactly what that was going to look like. I had no mentors. I had no business background, but we decided to do it. I also had 500 clients by that time. I had serviced 500 or so different entities and, you know, was starting to find my health suffer a bit. So it was time to make a move. And I hired an assistant tech in September of 2003. I rented a place for us to work out of at that same time. And we spent the next few months fixing it up. I spent a lot of late nights and bought a lot of friends pizza and beer to help paint and all that good stuff. Traded some labor from one of my clients who built cabinetry, and he built our front desk out. And we opened up on June 1st of 2004. Interestingly, the afternoon that we closed for business the first day, we had a rainbow show up, and the end of the rainbow hit the shop. I took a picture of it and I thought, well, that's a good omen.
Nice.
And then not quite a year later, we almost went completely belly up.
Wow.
I had made some mistakes and some early hiring, and had put a lot of faith in people who maybe were gangbusters out of the gate, but then would just settle in. And what I discovered was that a lot of our client base, and I know a lot of your listeners can relate, a lot of our client base did not want to work with anybody else.
Right.
They wanted me, and they perceived me to be the guy. And I was also the guy who knew what he was doing more so than these other people. And it was very, very interesting. And then I hired an operations director in early 2005 to run the show, thinking that if I could maintain out in the field and this person could run what was going on internally, things would be much better. And that was a horrible mistake. She was a delightful person, but her ideas about how to market an IT business were awful, to be frank. She thought that maybe putting up a booth at an elementary school fundraiser would be a great idea on how to get our name out there. I dropped money to do a sponsorship for a fundraising event at the Nashville Zoo, and she did not light it up with our presence, our logo, nothing. I mean, handing out flyers to people as they're coming in, you know, and I'm watching this happen, and they're walking 10 steps and throwing them in the nearest trash can. It was just bad. And I had to make some very severe readjustments in 2005, and we came out of it. But again, you know, just an absolute critical mistake on my part in reacting to what I was experiencing rather than planning, you know, setting out a vision of what I wanted and structuring duties and so forth around that.
Well, I think sometimes we learn from our experiences, and it sounds like from your standpoint, you've looked at things from two different ways. You've done it as the person that's the technician only, and then you hire a person to kind of help out with the technical needs and kind of running the show. And then you're the face or the technician of your business. And all of a sudden now you've got a manager that's trying to manage the background stuff. And obviously neither one of those were a perfect fit for that particular time, but I'm sure you learned a ton out of it, of things not only that you could improve on, but things not to do.
Oh yeah. I mean, absolutely. And there have been a lot of people that came before me, and people that came and are doing this, you know, after the fact. There are so many more resources now. I mean, here I am, I'm 46 years old. I spend time in the Facebook peer groups all the time. I learn stuff constantly. I try to absorb information from, you know, people that may have found a fantastic software solution or a great SEO technique for their business. You can't stop learning. And right. The only way to really learn is to put your foot in it once in a while. If everything is going solidly, then you're going to have a real bad crash at some point.
Yes.
Because you didn't prepare for exactly what was coming. So as I made the mistakes, I really tried to learn. And one of the many was, again, putting your faith in very well-intentioned people who were not provided the exact metrics that maybe they needed to be successful.
Right.
I have a real weakness in that I expect people to see what I see. I think maybe something is just blindly obvious as far as how to troubleshoot a problem or how to treat a client, and it's not. You know, everybody's going to have different methodologies. Everybody is different. And unless you set a standard or an SOP or a company culture or a combination of all of the above, you're not going to get the results that you want.
Right. Exactly. So obviously you went through both of those, but obviously you're still doing well and you're still running your business. So what's changed nowadays? Now we're past 2005. We're getting into the late, 2010 era, so on and so forth. And obviously it's 2017 now, but what types of things did you start to change after going through both those experiences?
Well, in late 2004, I hired a really good tech. In fact, It was godsend that I found him. And I almost didn't hire him because one of my first hires had been his brother-in-law. His brother-in-law says, hey, you know, so-and-so, you know, he really could use a job. He's really, really good at tech stuff. And I said, oh, really? Well, what does he do? And he said, he works at Jiffy Lube. I said, okay, well, I was a bartender, so I wasn't going to let that be a strike. You know, I'll talk to the guy. And sat down with him and just sort of threw a couple of scenarios at him, and I liked his answers. And he was about to get his own Jiffy Lube store. He was going to get a, not ownership, but a management position at one. And he said, I'd really, really, really love to work for you instead. It's what I like to do. It's what I want to do. So I ended up making him an offer, which as it turned out was $1,000 less than what Jiffy Lube had promised. And I said, well, I'm not going to let you have a bad taste in your mouth taking what you might consider a pay cut to come to work for me. So I'll go up $1,000. And he came on and he did good work, but he was like me. He never had an IT background. He'd never worked IT for a business, no corporate background. And because of that, we did a lot of MASH unit work. We would, you know, we'd get a call, something wasn't working, we would go band-aid it, and the client would be thrilled because it worked again. But, you know, you're looking at this and you go back in the network closet and go, whoa. This is not the way that a business needs to be run. Now, keep in mind, you know, at that time, the businesses that we served typically were 10 or less employees. So it wasn't anywhere near as unprofessional or impactful as it would be if you've got a, you know, a 200 seat company. But it wasn't good nonetheless. Right. Bad practice scales. it's the same regardless. And excuse me, he did good work again, and the clients loved him, and word spread, and we started getting a lot more business clients. And then I started running the numbers, and 90% of our client base was residential, but 60% of our revenue came from the businesses. So we focused on that, and this is where I became loosely familiar with the concept of managed services. Just reading about it here and there, I would read CRN, and there was so much of it just was not relevant to me because of the market that I had and the level of stuff that we were doing. But then all of a sudden, you know, we're supporting a nonprofit that is statewide and has 5 locations. And I've got to figure out, if Memphis goes down, how do I get a tech down there? I've got to start figuring all these things out. And I also became very, very, very aware that we had clients who were nowhere near as protected as I felt that they should be. My tech, I'll call him my lead tech, I won't name him at the time, the guy that I had hired that did so well, he had a complete passion for technology, and he started building, you know, firewalls using pfSense and so forth, Spiceworks, and playing with this stuff and figuring out how we could utilize it and deploying it in certain places, you know, from time to time, which was sort of a first stage managed services. And then I came in from a job one day, and I had a flyer on my desk, and it was, I thought, this is the answer to my prayers. There was a guy here in town, and he had a relationship with Kaseya. And I don't remember exactly when it was that Kaseya started licensing differently, but way, way, way back in the day, if I remember this correctly, you had to have a massive capital outlay just to get started, really, with any sort of RMM solution. Thousands of dollars and a minimum license count of, I don't know, you know, 1 to 500, something like that. There was no real pay-as-you-go model, so it had been cost prohibitive. But this gentleman sold one-off Kaseya licenses for $10 a pop per month. And I thought, this is how we start getting people on plans. And to my surprise, we had a lot of residential clients take us up on that. they really like the idea of us being able to remote in, provide AV through the RMM solution. And we were, I don't want to say we were playing with it, but it was the first time that we really standardized on something that we could really market. It was the first time we had ever had any regular or monthly recurring revenue at all. And once you get a taste for that, or you get an idea of what that really could look like, you know, common sense shows that it really kind of makes sense. And I'll back up a little bit here as well. The managed services model came to my mind because of a professor at Vanderbilt's Owen School of Business, Graduate School of Business, a gentleman named Dr. David Furse. He became aware of us because we were in his neighborhood. And he decided that one of his business classes, the graduate classes in their senior year, could possibly do a project on us. And 50 businesses from around the Nashville area submitted applications to be a part of this. Two were awarded the project. We were one of them. The other one was a company developing a low-carb potato chip because it was right in the middle of the Atkins diet craze. And I was happy with that. I figured that low-carb potato chips would probably go away a long time before computers did. In 2005, his class did a workup. I opened the books. They interviewed clients. They interviewed our staff for months. And this class, not knowing anything about technology, they were just a business class. They came up with the managed services model. Now, it had already been invented, obviously, and it was being executed in certain places. But it was the first time that I really became cognizant of it. With that said, they had no idea that it existed. And you know, one of the things was, well, you're going to have to develop a tool to manage these computers, and there's probably going to be a minimum of $50,000 to get that developed. And you know, but they showed how the subscription-based model was the answer to IT profitability. And it was really fascinating. I still have a copy of that report. I'm still very close to Dr. Furse, and we meet regularly. Still do work for him. He's a superb human being. And you know, for the next 3 years, I had no way to do it. I didn't really know what was out there. I was still unaware of ConnectWise.
I was going to say, now with Kaseya, back in the day, you said you were able to get that for $10 a pop or $10 an endpoint, right?
Correct.
Okay. Now, back then, if you don't mind me asking, what were you charging your customers for that service?
Not enough.
we never do. We never start out with enough.
are you familiar with Paul Dipple of Service Leadership?
No, I'm not.
Service Leadership is a company that was founded by Mr. Dipple, and they really set the standard for IT best practices, business best practices for MSPs. And Robin Robbins did an interview with him about 3 years ago, and I will never forget it. I will see if I can locate it and get you a copy to listen to. But Paul starts out and he's like, yeah, and we all know these guys in the industry and they think that they can do stuff better than anybody else. And so they hang out a shingle and they charge $65 an hour and their client base explodes on them because they're charging so little and they do good work. And then they realize they need help. So they have to hire somebody and all of a sudden they have to charge $85 an hour. And I mean, he was my life story here. You know, it was just, I mean, dead on. But at the time I'm out here in my middle Tennessee island, I don't know of any, you know, anybody else doing this way. Not that that's a good thing. But we were charging for residential clients, we would charge $25. Okay. And give them a scaled discount on services. And of course, now we had the ability to remote in passively, which was outstanding. I mean, I know how funny that sounds now, but when you've never had it before, it's huge. It's absolutely huge to not have to roll a truck.
Oh, yeah. And so, yeah, there's a lot of convenience in that. So let me get this straight, though. $10 a pop. Mm-hmm. They were charging you for using that service. You were charging your customer $25 and giving
on the residential
side. On the residential side and giving them a reduced rate in service and all that kind of stuff. So nowadays, people say that it can't be done and the RMM solutions are too expensive. I think you just disproved that theory.
Yeah. And again, we made a lot of mistakes. The first way that I used that for business offerings was to, I didn't quote it really by endpoint. I knew what it was going to cost. If we had, you know, obviously 10 endpoints in a business, it was going to cost me $100 a month. But what I would do is bundle up some sort of service offering saying, we'll give you this, this. And it was almost always put together with block time, which of course was one of the standard ways to sell IT services back then.
Okay.
So, you know, I made sure that there was some kind of profit built in. But again, that's another mistake that I always made in the early days was conspicuous undercharging for services.
The problem I think we all have because we don't feel we're good enough or whatever it might be, or we don't have the expertise. But the reality is, a lot of us have a lot more expertise than people think. And, you know, that's the reason they're calling us, because they want our expertise. Not necessarily the cheapest guy on the block that's just going to do it today and be gone tomorrow.
Right. Yeah. They're calling you for a reason. And many times, you know, I've had employees in the past who want to give the client a break on something because it was easy for them. It was easy for them to do this for the client. Or maybe they thought, well, you know, all the client had to do was, you know, if they wanted to do it themselves, they could have looked it up online and done it in 10 minutes. And that's not the point. The point is the client wanted to get this done. I can go to AutoZone and I can buy the little ramps and, you know, one weekend every quarter, I can change my own oil. Well, yeah, that's not going to cost me as much, but I'm just not inclined to do that. I want to outsource that. That's the reason we exist.
Yeah, absolutely. And to jump off of that too, I will say, so if I buy Fords and I use Motorcraft oil, and Motorcraft filter. So when I go get my oil change, it's $29 at the dealership. They rotate my tires, they check all my fluids, they check the whole car. I cannot spend $29 at AutoZone. It'll cost me more to buy the materials myself and do it versus right. just going to them, to somebody who's already got the materials. They've got the proper materials in the good stuff, semi-synthetic, all that kind of stuff. I'm not getting just a cheap oil change. And so it's a big difference. And a lot of people don't realize that there is a cost for value.
Exactly. And that's something that I internalized and hold very close, you know, to this day. It kind of also leads into where my mind was at the time. In late 2006, we moved out of our first storefront into a larger one. We had much more exposure on a very heavily trafficked road, sign out by the road and so forth. And again, we were doing work for more and more businesses that used us on a break fix basis. And I would broach the topic sometimes of cloud backup or image-based disaster recovery. And well, we probably don't need that right now. Yeah, just that kind of thing. And I'm, you know, and then there's more and more of these. And I'm, you know, I am starting to lose sleep at night. I am starting to think this is just not good because they're not taking it as seriously as they should. They're not taking their business data as seriously as they should. And is this, you know, a lack of salesmanship on my part? Is it education? Is it, you know, what do I need to do here? And again, I thought about maybe hiring a salesperson or something like that, but I didn't want to do that because we seem to have, and we did have all the business that we could handle. Was it good business? Was it business that makes you rich? Is it business that a lot of consultants, like I'll use Robin Robbins again, would turn their nose up at because you're doing one-off jobs every 2 or 3 years for some of these people, and you know there's 150, 200 bucks you didn't have before. It was a lot of busy work, and what it kept coming down to in my mind is, we have an open sign on the door. When you have a retail storefront and you have an open sign, you're not vetting people as to whether they're a good fit to do work with as they're coming in the door. And when you walk into Costco, they're not going to sit you down and sort of do an assessment of your shopping habits and figure out if you really need to be a member.
Right.
They're open for a reason. And we had conflict of interest isn't really the word, but we had this issue wherein, you know, people just saw us as being available. And who am I to say that we're not going to be? We have an open sign. And we had more and more and more businesses that were just not where they needed to be from an infrastructure point of view. And there were a couple of things that happened that really sort of cleared this up in my mind or brought it to a head. We had a wine and spirits store that had a server crash on Halloween in 2009. That was a Saturday, and the server crashed in the morning. So just do the quick math here. You're a liquor store, and it's Halloween, and it's Saturday. we had the Kaseya Acronis backup system in place, and we got them up and running by noon. As my tech was leaving, the manager at the time made the comment, just an offhand comment, "Oh, I guess that was an easy one today." And that's fine. It was, but it was only easy because we were prepared for it.
Right.
And it got me thinking, how many clients do we have that do not have that very basic thing? A lot, a whole lot. And it made me extraordinarily uneasy. I wrote up a case study for that wine and spirit store that showed they would have been, best case scenario, they would have been closed until Thursday the following week while we rebuilt a server for them. Figuring in getting the vendor to, which was open on Monday, to overnight, it would have been a disaster.
Right.
And it really hit home with me. The next thing, it goes back to that very same store, coincidentally. In the very last part of April of 2010, I got them to sign off on offsite backup as well. That was on a Friday. On Saturday, it started raining. And that night, my wife and I got my daughters off to my parents, and we went to see Jimmy Buffett in downtown Nashville. It rained all day, rain like I had never seen, and rained all night. We went to the concert, and the mayor came out before Mr. Buffett did, said, basically, we might have a situation here. Just enjoy the show. Be careful. And that Sunday morning, the water began to rise. And our neighborhood, our area of Nashville, experienced a completely catastrophic flood. All of Nashville did. But there were some areas that were much more profoundly impacted than others. Our area, there were several deaths. It's hard to describe what it was really like. I can tell you that we were not able to get my daughters back home for 5 days because there was no way in and out of our area. That Sunday, I kept riding up to our shop on my bicycle because I was scared to take a car. To my amazement, our facility suffered no damage at all, and my home did not either. But there were tens of thousands of people around us who were absolutely devastated. And we were not able to open that Monday. That Tuesday, I had enough things in place. We had forwarded our telephones to a Skype number. We had one internet connection that was barely working. Cell phones did not work. We just had no capability to use them at all. But we decided to open. And 10 businesses that first day brought in critical equipment that had been submerged. That was day one. And I quit counting after that. This is what we dealt with for quite a few months. But of those 10 businesses, and these 10 businesses, by the way, none of them were clients. None of them were existing clients. None of them we had ever done any work for. These were people just in a state of panic. And 8 of those businesses went under because of their data loss situation. One of them, we were able to get the drive off to the lab. They instructed us to pack it in the river water that had flooded it and not dry it, which that's exactly what we did. They were able to recover the data off of the drive, and the business went on. The other one just elected to start all accounting from scratch, and they managed to make it. But I'm looking at this, and I'm like, this is enough. Enough is enough. This is no good. And then I had a member of our local chamber pay me a visit and scold me for not pushing him hard enough to get onto the backup that he really needed. And it was not a cordial conversation. There was no joking about it. He more or less insinuated that maybe there was liability on my part as his IT provider to not have offsite backup the way that he really should have it. And I thought to myself, you know, that's absolutely absurd, but there are people in this world and people in positions of power that might just see it his way. I thought back to the old Julia Mero case. I'm not sure you were ever familiar with her. She was a substitute teacher in Connecticut, and she opened up a computer in front of a classroom, middle school classroom, that was infected with spyware, and pornographic pop-ups started happening, and she was convicted.
Right. I remember that.
She was convicted, and Alex Eckelberry of Sunbelt Software led the charge. He got people from around the country to work for her pro bono, and that conviction was overturned. But I thought, you know, this is something where if someone made just the right kind of argument, that could happen to me. And I started really at that moment, I was reconciling in my brain, what do I do? What do I do here? I've got a storefront that's established. We're open. We're not there to turn people away. So I talked to a couple of attorney friends. I talked to peers. And then I had a great conversation with a friend who had legal and business background. And her response was, the answer, Alan, is you don't do it. You don't do it. You start a second company that has its own set of rules and its own set of liabilities. Its own set of standards. And you take the Mouse Calls clients that belong under that, and you say, I've got to move you, and you've got to have these minimum things like cloud backup and disaster recovery and some sort of antivirus that we can monitor, or we can't keep you. And that's how Sun River, the concept of Sun River, was really born. I was very, very lucky. The subsequent year to be introduced to a gentleman who's now my partner in Sun River. He had an enterprise IT background. He had done IT for Jack Daniels, in fact. And with that said, he had not had a lot of exposure to some of the things that we were using, like Kaseya. I mean, I say that he had enterprise IT. He would provide outsourced IT for companies, and the vast majority of it was putting an actual human being in the premises there to run the IT using whatever tools they had and buying what they needed. But from a remote management standpoint, there wasn't much there. So his strengths were my weaknesses and vice versa. And we decided to put our heads together and form Sun River, which took on another life of its own. But that was our answer. That was really how we reconciled having a storefront and servicing business-to-business clients in the standard by which they deserved and wherein we could control the quality. We just didn't. We started up a totally different company and avoid the legal issues that might arise then and down the road.
Wow. I'll tell you what, I think a lot of people have felt the same way over the years is, and I know I was that way with even things like backup. It's like, who do I use for backup? What am I liable for? And I would always cringe when somebody would go, yeah, we're going to do backup and we're going to keep a server on our premises and we're going to back up all our clients. And I'm like going, there is no way I would want that liability ever. So right. I wanted a company that had been established, been around for a while and had some, you know, best practices or whatever you want to call them in the industry and said, okay, at least I've got somebody else that I can go to and go, hey, this is screwed up. You need to fix this versus right. me having to, you know, hold all the liability for that.
So. Oh, exactly. I mean, one thing that's really become crystal clear to me is that your vendor partnerships can be absolutely key to the success of really anything that you're doing. There are a lot of vendors who are much better than others in delivering a particular product at a price point that you can monetize easily. And to have a really stable point of contact within that organization is absolutely huge. I don't care what level you're working on. I can't really state that enough. Accountability is the biggest part of that. With Sun River, for example, when we encounter a healthcare client, anybody that you know, that touches healthcare needs to be absolutely certain that you've got all your ducks in a row. I can tell you, we have a person who is on board with us. She's a client. She has two computers. That's it. Two computers. But because of what she does, she encounters patient information all the time. And we have encryption on those hard drives. We have encrypted email. We have her locked down to HIPAA standards because for those listeners that aren't aware, if you are providing ongoing IT services and there is a HIPAA breach that is IT related, you share the liability. If you don't have them locked down, you are setting yourself up for a fall. And I have utilized this woman in discussions with healthcare opportunities that are 10 or 15 people. We had one last week where it's a very small chiropractic outfit. And he stated that, you know, he knew everything he needed to know about HIPAA. And he knew that he was in good shape there. And we went in and he has no firewall.
I love when the customer always says, no, I know exactly what's going on and they have no clue.
No, there's no network security at all. And, you know, I made the comment, like, we have a person who works with health insurance companies who is a one woman show, and she is vastly more protected than your entire practice. And that's not meant to be a slam on you, but it's a fact.
Right.
And these are things that just have to be addressed. And I keep, that's why I keep mouse calls out of that, you know, again, just because of those liability issues. The other part of this though, is one thing that's been very advantageous about the way that we've done this is in the mouse calls model, you very rarely encounter, a client who has a true Windows server, whether it's small business or 2008, 2012, you just don't see it much. We might have a QNAP in place, you know, here and there, or a Windows storage server, which is fine. But if you don't need server tech talent that much, you can keep your payroll margins much more in line than trying to do everything for everybody. And that's been good for us.
Okay. Very good. Wow. So that's a great idea though, to separate the companies and, you know, so that you can, and I also like that you have come up with you need to have these minimums in place in order for us to support you, or we're not going to support you because we don't want to be liable if something does happen to you. And I think a lot of people get mixed up in their minds, and we think about things like, we're going to charge the customer. No, we're going to provide a solution for the customer that they are going to pay us well for, but that's the part of doing business. It's not a bad thing to charge somebody for doing the right job and taking care of them. Number one, absolutely, we want to protect them, but number two, we want to get paid accordingly. And so, again, to me, it's a win-win situation, but I think sometimes people have to take the emotion out of it.
Well, it's worked well for us. Yeah, you're right. I mean, you've got to frankly take the emotion out of the business equation altogether. There are some people that you are going to want to work with and some that you don't. And I mean, here we are in 2017. I'm trying to take mouse calls toward a full subscription model, and we have our work cut out for us. One thing that I have not mentioned in the show is back in July of last year, we were coming up on our 10th anniversary in our existing facility. And the first week of July, we had a lightning strike that did catastrophic damage to our network equipment inside. Fortunately, it didn't hit any computers or servers. It knocked out some NICs, but nothing we couldn't recover from. And then within 10 days, we had a pipe burst.
Oh,
and in the course of repairing that, we had ServPro came in. The landlord was extraordinarily gracious with getting people in there fast. But during the course of the repair, we found lead-based paint. We found mold. And really the final straw, my operations director's daughter had hurt her foot and she was on crutches. And this is around September. So, we've been dealing with this for 2 months. She was going down the handicap ramp in the back of our building, and one of her crutches went through one of the wooden planks. And I'm like, the God or the universe is trying to tell us to get out of this building.
Oh, wow.
Which we did. We suddenly were gone from the neighborhood where we had been for, upwards of 19 years, and transplanted ourselves to Franklin, Tennessee, where I keep mentioning Robin Robbins, but for those familiar with the area, that's, where she's located. We went from a known entity, something that was kind of ubiquitous within the Bellevue community of Nashville, to a place where nobody had ever heard of us. And it occurred to me, sometimes I have these little voices in my mind, it occurred to me that it sure would be nice if the business could go on just like that without it making an impact at all. It kind of made me realize that that with a subscription model, it's location independent.
Right.
And you don't necessarily have to have that storefront. Now, yeah, a storefront brings in business you would not have otherwise. Do not get me wrong.
Right.
And different things work for different people. But, I still can't quite get past clients that would come in from time to time and say, yeah, you guys have been doing my work for 10 years at least, or Alan was my tech back in, I've been doing it for 20 years. And, I've just never used anybody but y'all. And I was hoping maybe I could get a deal. And I look back at their history and, going back to 2004, when we opened, we might've done two or three jobs for these people.
Right.
And, I've had the conversation more than once. When did it occur to you to go into McDonald's and say, I have been a regular customer here for, 20, 30 years. And, I've been in here, 3 or 4 times during that time. And I was wondering, can you cut me some slack on the cost of a biscuit? People don't do that in other environments. People don't think that way. I had a conversation with a client once who was absolutely appalled that I would mark up hardware. And I said to him, I said, well, do you do the same thing when you walk into a supermarket? Do you go find the manager and complain that all these foodstuffs are marked up over wholesale? Because they are. And I'm not really sure why you have a problem with me doing it as part of the nature of business and being able to stand behind the product, but you don't in other places. People think very selectively. And I had a very wise boss who told me one time that you don't get to go to heaven unless you deal with the public at least once in your life in a work capacity. And I agree with him wholeheartedly. Oh. And there are clients that I absolutely love. And then there are clients who maybe I don't so much. But when you have that open sign on, you're going to get what you're going to get.
Now, are you, I say this, are you selective at all with some of the clientele that come in as far as I'm going to charge you X amount to do this job and they just kind of, maybe they go away and go find somebody else.
Yes. In fact, it's funny that you mentioned that. It's part of our business model with Mouse Calls.
Okay.
And just to make that, clear. So nobody on the show thinks that I'm a complete jerk, or that I'm just cherry picking clients that I might like to work with. We, without going into great detail, we have a series of subscription plans that you can be a part of, and anything outside the scope of service of those subscription plans scales drastically down in price the higher plan you're on. I mean, for example, if you're on our entry level plan and we need to come on site, instead of $169 an hour, you're going to pay $129.
Okay.
For a client that's on the upper end plan, well, we'll come out and troubleshoot that machine on site for free. The caveat is that machine has to be under warranty for you to qualify for that plan. So it incentivizes people to keep newer equipment. It incentivizes people to go on a plan because long term, they're going to pay, you know, the same or less, but they get a lot of fringe benefits. They get the cloud backup. They get the security. They get the ability to call us and have one-off remotes here and there at no charge. So it's designed more or less to steer people into valuing our presence in the form of a subscription model rather than our presence in being there like their fire department. And yeah, I mean, we do. I've got a computer in our service center right now that is owned by a property management company, and there's no backup, and QuickBooks is on there. We picked it up as a courtesy pickup on Friday, and fortunately, you know, all the data is there. I can see it. I'm not sure why it's not booting yet, but we'll figure that out. Long story short, you know, now in this era, I'm really probably the worst tech that we have. I am. And I focus my efforts on learning business aspects of things and solution selling and creation. You have to evolve.
Right.
If you're going to scale, you have to evolve. That client, you know, the first thing that I see is this is one machine, but boy, do they need to be on a plan. Because that they would know every day that data is in the cloud and that we're standing behind it because they're seeing our logo every day tell them that it's backed up. And that's huge. And that's where I want to be.
Gotcha. It's almost like an insurance plan, but actually an insurance plan that has benefits that pays off over time.
Exactly. You nailed it right there. I have thought about different ways to market it that exact way.
Yeah, because you're actually getting you know, one of the things I like to tell customers is that do you want your computer to work right most of the time versus maybe you have it work for a few months, then it starts to slow down, then you start to have problems. And usually you don't bring it to me until you can't get on the internet for whatever reason because your browser is no longer working.
Right.
And I go, I don't understand how a person can suffer for months before they actually get the problem fixed. And they go through the same process over and over and over again versus having something that's there all the time, protecting them, taking care of them, and doing what it needs to do on that system, and then just paying for incidentals.
There, I agree with you 100%, and I still try to kind of wrap my head around it. There are different approaches to how a person views IT that are frankly fascinating. I mean, I have encountered individuals or home office users that take the mature approach that, yeah, you know, companies have IT departments for a reason. I'm a one-person show running a business. And for example, I've got a client who makes hundreds of thousands of dollars working out of his house. And you better believe that he is backed up. He is the ideal client. Every time he buys a machine, he buys two. So that if we ever need to cannibalize a part, we've got it. I mean, he's wow. Perfect. And then you encounter businesses who treat IT as something of a novelty like we did in 1996. If they need a machine, they'll have us quote it, and then they'll go to Costco and buy something for a third the price.
And it's nowhere near the same machine.
Nowhere near the same machine, but they don't understand that there is a difference.
Right.
And it makes it much more difficult to work with them.
Gotta love people. Well, Alan, I'll tell you what, this has been fascinating, and I loved hearing your story from beginning to kind of where you're at now and even where you're going to in the future. And so I think with that, I think we're going to go ahead and end the show off, but I appreciate you coming out and sharing with us.
Well, I appreciate the time as well. I was very, very tickled and honored when you guys reached out. Hopefully I've given you some good content. Hopefully I didn't put anybody to sleep. And just note, I mean, next time that I'm up your way, I've got family in Michigan. We got to get together for coffee or a beer or something at least. And I am at your disposal in any capacity. And thank you again. It's been a real treat.
Oh, I definitely appreciate that. And yeah, definitely. If you're up here, let me know. Now, where can people find you if they wanted to get some more information on what you do, or maybe just reach out and ask you a question or something?
You can email me directly if you wish. Alan, A-L-A-N, at mousecallsonline.com.
Okay.
You can feel free to, you can find me on Facebook, obviously. I'm in a lot of the user groups that I'm sure some of the listeners are part of. We're on Twitter at mousecalls, and then there's Sun River Tech. You can follow that. And if anybody ever wants to just chat, feel free to call. I would say call the Mouse Calls line, because we do reserve the Sun River one for contracted higher end business clients. And I'd get some people mad at me if we had a lot of people just flood those lines. But I would call 615-662-0235 and just state who you are. And if you want to chat, I'll certainly accommodate as best I can.
Awesome. Well, definitely appreciate that. You guys can find me on the Google Plus at Jeffrey Hallish or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you'd like to be a guest like Alan was, send an email to guest@podnuts.com. And I want to thank our sponsor, Instant House Call, for this episode of Podnuts Daily. Don't forget, if you need business paperwork to get you started in your computer repair business, then check out the link for the TechNibble Computer Business Kit over at podnuts.com. You too can help support the Podnuts Network. Next time you're shopping at Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.